Community Connection, brought to you this morning by Advanced Orthopedics of Oklahoma. And we're going to talk elections just a little bit this morning. Just about more than a week, we'll be talking about early voting and, of course, the November 6th general election. My bad. I get the opportunity to spend a little bit of time, first of all, with State House candidate Kevin Stacey. Thank you for coming in, sir. I bet you are still out knocking doors.
Yeah, it's still a daily process.
Yeah, as I would expect nothing less, because every voter kind of tends to remember that last impression that they got just before they go to the polls.
And I hope that's a good impression.
No, I hope it is too. For either candidate, I hope it's a good impression. And I think the two of you, from my point of view, have conducted a professional race.
Yeah, I had dinner with Judd, or breakfast with Judd, and you know, that's conversations we've had. We both get along really well. We both think each other have really good ideas and good experiences, and it's been a positive, cordial friendship kind of race, and I think that's unusual in today's society. You know, I've just been campaigning on having more experience, being older and wiser than the rest of you. That's an old the FFA ag part of the ag teachers saying at the meetings, but that's what I've been campaigning on.
And I think that's something that you have brought forward as a positive point on your campaign, and also the fact that you have kind of come out early in this race and said, should you be elected, that you would be contributing some money to a ag program in a local school district.
Yeah, you know, still with that mindset. When elected, half of my salary will go to a public school in District 10, and if they have an ag chapter, I would like for half of that go to the ag chapter, and the rest of it go to extracurricular activities such as band, academic teams, whatever that school has, and they would decide where that went.
Yeah, just as I observe things, and please correct me if I'm wrong, school size, large or small, it's those extracurricular activities, band, chorus, football, basketball, wrestling, ag, all those things that give the students a good reason to be going to school. We know that they're going for an education, but they, I think, at times want to make sure they maintain that eligibility to compete in whatever it is they're competing at.
Yeah, at Ramona last night at the forum, that came up as a question. Is really those activities provide avenues for students to be active in. And the more activities they're active in, the less likely they're in activities that are not good for them. So that's the way most educators look at it. It gives us an opportunity to involve them in programs outside of the school. It causes them to invest time, and time invested there is not free time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's important. And somewhere along the line, teachers have a way of implanting knowledge in their brain. Yeah.
That is correct.
if I know that you're out talking to people, and I know that that's your primary purpose for coming in to talk about your candidacy, but you also came up and said, you know, there are several state questions on the ballot, and we're going to get Kevin Stacey's opinion as opposed to maybe a straight down the middle, but either way, it's important that we inform voters of what else is going to be on their ballot.
Yep. Yeah, that's correct. We're not really going to try to influence your vote, but I think you need to have an idea of what my thinking is about them and why. And it'll be interesting to have that discussion today.
I think it will be. And I grabbed a League of Women Voters publication here that they worked, I think, pretty hard to try to tell both sides of it. And I grabbed it particularly because we see numbers in some of the ads for or against some of these questions, and sometimes we don't associate the number with what we're really talking about. So I grabbed that to make sure. They are, first one, 793. That one has probably had a lot of public conversation by folks on either side of the question. That's the one that has to do with vision care and eyeglasses. And I'm going to summarize this thing. Oklahoma, one of three states, Oklahoma, Delaware, and Rhode Island, that do not permit optometric services in retail establishments, whether that is Walmart. I don't think there are any Costcos in the state, but Costco, big stores like that, where we all see them as kind of a little island inside the Sam's Club or whatever, that say, come have your hearing checked and get a hearing aid. Same sort of thing for eye care and eyeglasses in those establishments.
Which I'm all for opportunities for consumers to have access to those type of services. But, you know, we have to watch. We have people invested in this community that have lived here for years that have those types of businesses and tend to give back more than those box stores.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just use K-Rig. You know, yeah. K-Rig, the Potter family, I see them all the time at premium sales that are giving back to youth. And I'm sure they support ball teams and uniforms and those types of things.
You can see the pictures on the wall, I think.
Yeah, so those local businesses tend to be the ball team sponsors and the band sponsors or put ads in your school programs or whatever it is. And I have concerns that when we open up those in those box stores, excuse me, that we may run some of those small businesses that are tied to this community out of operation. And I don't think that's good for communities like Bartersville and Nowata and Lenapaw and Juan and Ramona. So I have a hard time supporting that for that reason, because I see the value of that support from those businesses to their communities.
And I think that's a valid concern. You know, I can, when you look at it, it's always nice to have something that's convenient, and I can certainly see it from that point of view. But when you talk about it from the point of view of those communities, from those businesses that we all turn to, every local school, every nonprofit, when you got an event coming up, we all make the rounds. We say, "I got an event coming up. Can you help me?"
Yep, that is exactly correct. So without those in business, we're going to be in competition with the ones that are there, and they can only give so much.
Yeah, and they generally have set aside at least a mental figure, whether it's a written down figure, as you know. And from their point of view, when they've given, you know, for the past 10 months out of the year, at some point they have to say, "Yeah, I wish you'd have been here sooner."
Yep, correct.
And we can go back to any of these questions if you want to. I'm just going to kind of run down them, and when I think we've covered it, we'll move on. 794, better known as Marcy's Law, and the DA was in back in the spring talking about this a little bit, but named for the sister of its proponent, Henry Nicholas. His sister, Marcy, or Marcy Nicholas, was shot and killed by her ex-boyfriend in 83. Days later, the accused killer was out on bail and confronted Nicholas and his mother at a grocery store. Family didn't know that the accusee was out, and this law basically would inform the victims that, or at least accused victims, that individual was out or had been released on probation or other things, that they could run into that individual in the streets.
Yeah, that's pretty straightforward. It's just a state question that's going to give victims' rights more attention. When that scenario, when somebody's arrested and released, they'll notify the victim or victim's family. If they're convicted, they'll notify them when they're going up for parole or when they move them from prison to prison or when they get out, those types of things. We tend to, in my opinion, strictly my opinion, sometimes the accused has more rights than the victims, and we need to treat those with respect also. So, you know, that particular question I would be a yes on. I see nothing wrong with notifying those people that have concerns and maybe do not want to run into one at the local store, and would take precautions against that. So, but pretty straightforward, I think. So.
Yeah, I think many people would agree with you. It's up for a vote in several states. Oklahoma, Georgia, Nevada, North Carolina, and Florida all will vote on different, slightly different versions of it, but basically the same intent.
Yep, so, that is correct.
Yeah. So you can kind of look at that on both sides. There probably is a cost to the judicial system somewhere along the line to call, phone, email, certified mail, however they would contact the victim or their family. But overall, I think that's something we probably would weigh a little bit. But many people, I think, would come down on basically what you said.
Yep, that, you know, it would be an expense to it, but not much. You know, it doesn't take much to send an email.
Okay. Next one, 798. This one has not gotten a lot of information. If you boil it down, single ticket, basically it's the proposal, and I have heard current Lieutenant Governor Todd Lamb talk about this even more than a year ago, that a governor and lieutenant governor would run as a pair. It's kind of like president, vice president, they run as a ticket. Probably if I were to guess, I'd say most states that do it that way, but I haven't actually taken a tally. But also, I'll say many run with a pair running for governor, lieutenant governor, as two people that have kind of agreed that they could work together, agree more than they disagree, as opposed to theoretically a Republican governor and a Democrat lieutenant governor, or vice versa.
Yeah, it'd be a change in the way Oklahoma runs the election. It basically it would be just like the president. The governor candidates would have more input in selecting who would be the lieutenant governor if they're elected, so they'd run on the same ticket, just like the presidential election does at the national level. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of different views out there, and I really haven't studied that one 100% where I've really made a decision on how I'm going to vote on that one. I really don't see a problem with the way we're doing it. I'm sure that if a Republican governor was elected and a Democratic lieutenant governor was elected, and then we had an issue with the governor, the Republicans wouldn't like that. If it'd be vice versa, if a Democrat governor was elected and Republican lieutenant governor was elected and there was an issue that the governor had to leave office, then that party wouldn't like that. But I see it as a party deal, you know, is trying to make sure that whichever party wins stays in control during that whole time at that level. So, you know, study that one, and I'm sure it'll probably be a party line type of vote. I don't know, but leaning right now, I'm probably a no on that question. If you ask me right now, what would I do? But I may change my mind before November 6th.
That's one of those things that I, Charlie's personal opinion, some states have got a really long early voting time, and people may go to the polls in mid-October and mark their ballot in early voting, and then by the time we get around to, say, this week, they may have changed their mind, but they already voted. I like Oklahoma's. We'll give you 3 days.
And
I can see that particularly from where a lieutenant governor casts the deciding vote in a tie situation, that the voters kind of intended this party to be in control, whichever it is. And if the lieutenant governor is the other party, it tends to at least appear to negate what the intent of the voters may have been. I
haven't researched it out, but I'm pretty confident that most years that if it's a Democratic governor or Republican governor, the lieutenant governor is of that same party. There might be some instances in the past where that was, but I bet it was very few.
I'd have to check the numbers, but I bet you're right. We're talking with Kevin Stacey, and he is a candidate for the State House, and we have talked a little bit about his candidacy, and we will again, but we're reviewing some of the other state questions on the ballot, and we'll continue coming up in just a moment.
Announcing the new Advanced Orthopedics of Oklahoma. Two of Oklahoma's premier orthopedic experts, Central State Orthopedics and Eastern Oklahoma Orthopedic Center, EOC, have now merged to become Oklahoma's premier orthopedic healthcare expert, Advanced Orthopedics of Oklahoma, PLLC. So if you're in need of back surgery, knee or hip replacement, call the specialist at Advanced Orthopedics of Oklahoma, 918-494-9300. Advanced Orthopedics of Oklahoma now offers the best orthopedic care in the state, and I should know. It's where I had my back surgery. So whether you're in need of back surgery, hip or knee replacement, trust your happiness to Advanced Orthopedics of Oklahoma, located in the Natalie Building at 65th and Yale. Call 918-494-9300. Advanced Orthopedics of Oklahoma.
Continuing our time this morning with Kevin Stacey. He is, again, a candidate for the Oklahoma State House, and we'll talk more about that coming up just a little bit, but we are reviewing some of the state questions. Number 800, that's going to be on the ballot. This one, they call it the Oklahoma Vision Fund, and basically it also may be known as the Oklahoma Oil and Gas Development Tax Revenue Investment Fund Amendment. That's too long for me. It supplements the Rainy Day Fund and kind of that sets up a little bit different rules, but basically would receive 5% of the state's oil and gas production tax revenue into a savings account to be used for specified purposes should the need arise.
Yeah, it's a savings account, which I'm all for savings account at the state level and at the personal level. But we have to, you know, my concern is that we're putting in statute that no matter what the economy is in a downturn or an upturn, that we're allocating money towards that savings account right off the top that's not going to be available to appropriate. So it starts out at 5% of the gross production tax, and then every year it adds 0.2% to eventually where 100% of the gross production tax would go to that savings account. Now, it won't happen in my lifetime. It won't happen in your lifetime. But in our grandkids, then 100% of the gross production tax will go to that savings account, which sounds like a great idea, and it is. Savings account are good, but you know, we were allocating $50 million a year a few years ago to roads and bridges, and every year we put another $50 million with it. So the second year was $100 million, and then the next one was $150 million, which was a good plan and a good idea. But when the economy got down, even though we had a increase in revenue, we had less money to appropriate to core services because we already had that money earmarked to go right off the top before we ever started doing any business to roads and bridges. And I have a concern with this being the same way. We're going to have money already earmarked right off the top before we ever get to do any appropriations. And in lean times, that ties the legislators' hands on how they can do business the best. So that's the only concern I have about it. Savings accounts are great, but we have to be diligent in making sure we have some flexibility in down economic times.
And I'm just going to turn it around with what you said so that I think we emphasize what I believe your position is. In a nutshell, down to one sentence, it takes that flexibility away from the legislators, which is part of their duties to manage the budget and make best use of the resources the state has.
You know, the Rainy Day Fund works great, but in down times, we tend to go through that faster than it's there to get us through that whole 10 years or 5 years or whatever. And this would be the same way. You know, there would be some money there that maybe the first year or second year we would have access to. But when we get into year three, year four, in a long-term economic cycle, that's depleted, and then we're still putting money into it that we could be using for appropriations.
Yeah. Question 801, again, short title, the ad valorem tax for education. And you and I talked about this a little before we went on the air. In one sense, it says, I guess you're giving flexibility to the school board, local control of those dollars. And I think many people would say, well, yeah, I like local control. That sounds good.
Yeah, but it's a state question that will give local school boards the flexibility to use building funds for general operations. Local school boards get 5 mils off of their ad valorem that go strictly to building fund. And building fund can be used for repairs. If you have air conditioners go out, if you have a leaky roof, and you can use it to pay your custodial help. Mm-hmm. That's the only salary that you can pay out of it at this time. Some schools do not pay salary out of it. Some of them do. But my concerns is school districts that are dependent on state revenue versus school districts that are not, you know, and that's based strictly on your ad valorem tax base. Yeah, the funding formula in the state of Oklahoma is set up where that all students basically have a chance at an equal educational opportunity. Now, we know that's not 100% correct, but it's fairly close.
It's the intent, and
yes.
And I, in most cases, and you're the educator, I'm not, the formula probably works as designed.
Yes, it starts out that we're going to spend $3,500 of state money on every kid in Oklahoma. And then you subtract what are called chargeables, which is local money, and that's your ad valorem money, that's your oil and gas money, that's motor vehicle tax, rural electric co-op tax. Those are all called chargeables. So if you started out with $1 million total and you had $300,000 of chargeables, that comes off and you end up getting $700,000 from the state. Well, there's some school districts out there that's local money is more than that $1 million. They started out with $1 million, but these chargeables is $1.2 million, so they get no state money. It's all local money, and those are high ad valorem tax-based districts. And I'll use Pryor as an example of that. Pryor is a huge school district that gets no state money because of their local base, and it's due to that industrial park out there where Google is located.
Right.
Which is great because it really means that Oklahoma Union now has access to more money because Pryor didn't take any. So those schools that have a high ad valorem tax base, their building fund is going to be a lot higher than Oklahoma Union's too. So I see it as an opportunity for those schools to pay their teachers $10,000 more than I can pay or they can pay at Oklahoma Union or Bartersville or Caney Valley. And we know that people are going to go to where they can support their family the best. So they'll end up getting our high quality teachers and they'll go to Pryor, just as an example. And so that reduces the quality of my educators at Oklahoma Union, which in turn really reduces the quality of the education that we have. So I think it puts rural schools at a disadvantage because of their tax base. So, I'm against that question based for that fact. Now, I think it'll pass. I do. I think urban Oklahoma, it's advantages to them. They have some more flexibility. They have more dollars there. So, I really see that passing, but I'm a no vote on State Question 801 because I want kids in rural America to have the same opportunities as urban America.
And I certainly can't fault the teachers. I think most people, unless you have specific ties in the community you grew up in, for instance, to probably take the higher paycheck.
I can't fault them either. Yep. That's just part of society.
Teachers choose education for all kinds of reasons. So whether sometimes it's their own community, sometimes it's because they have a particular interest in students or all kinds of reasons. But yeah, I think many people also look at it as paycheck. So, those are the questions that are on the ballot. And I think you have run down your opinion, the list on that. And again, give voters an opportunity to do their homework a little bit better now over the last, like say, next 10 days or so.
Yeah, they need to look at those and make sure they understand the language and what it's saying and make their own minds up.
And we haven't covered all the pluses and minuses. This is mostly Kevin Stacey's opinion on the questions, and that's good. That's
yep.
one man's opinion.
That is correct.
Talking again about your candidacy and kind of relating back to at least one of the questions that we talked about, the responsibilities of the legislature to be able to allocate those dollars, and by allocating dollars in the budget, you're also setting the priorities for the state. How much road work are we going to do? How much prison reform are we going to do, and that sort of thing?
And that takes revenue. And one good thing about it, if you've been following the state treasurer, we're in an uptick in the economy. And that's due to oil prices. Oklahoma is heavily dependent on the price of oil as far as revenue raising measures for the state. For 50 years we've been talking about diversifying our economy, and the quicker we can do that, or the more attention we put to that, to be less dependent on oil and gas money, will help our economy in downtime times. So, and that's strictly based on the price of oil. But that's, so the money appropriated, it looks like we're going to have a good revenue stream. So decisions will be easier to make in the short term. Now, we'll go through another downturn. It always happens.
Yeah.
And usually it's about 15 to 20 years. Every time you can just watch the graph, just put it on a graph, and you can see the upturns and downturns from that. But so their responsibility is, and my responsibility would be to set policy that affects District 10. I've been telling everybody that I'm really the watchdog for you. If there's some bad policy out there that would affect District 10 negatively, then I would be against it. And it might go against my personal beliefs, but if it's not good for District 10, then I need to be against it. If it's good for District 10 and Washington County and Nowata County, then I need to be for it. You know, I'm not going to Oklahoma City as a Democrat or Republican. I'm not working for each one of those parties. I'm working for the people of District 10. And I think we've lost that a little bit in the past is we've become so partisan in our votes and our beliefs that we can't get past that and do what's right for Oklahoma and what's right for District 10 and those citizens in this community. And that's hard to do sometimes. You have a lot of pressure put on you by your party, and it takes some big boys' pants to do that. But I've got some pretty big boy pants. So that's my beliefs, and that's what I'll take to Oklahoma City.
We've been talking with Kevin Stacy this morning on Community Connection, reviewing some of the state questions, an opportunity for you to start doing your homework if you haven't started already, but also kind of an opportunity to remind us that we are about 10 days away from the election, and I haven't actually counted it, but let's say pretty close, and counting them down, I guess it would be 2 weeks from today. So, yeah, 14 days from the election, but an opportunity for you to go early vote on Friday and Saturday.
And so, some of them already voted by absentee.
Yes, they have.
I've run across that. Knocking on doors, you know, they'll say, I've already voted. And I said, well, I appreciate that. You know, that means you're a concerned citizen. And so, you know, my focus is to get as many people out to vote. And however they vote is fine. But everybody needs to exercise their right to vote and select that person or vote for that question however they believe. And that's your right. And hopefully you'll do that in an educated way. And make decisions based on what you know about it and not having to just pick or choose when you get there.
Sounds good. Kevin Stacy on a Community Connection on 1400 K1. Let's join news from the Oklahoma News Network.
Study will take a look at enhancing the collection of online sales taxes. Two studies at the State House.